Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Peter Maxwell Slattery Show. And today's guest is Cheryl Gottschall. How are you going, Cheryl?
I'm great, Peter. How are you?
Good. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's a real pleasure.
That's fine. That's fine. Thank you. Now, you are the president of UFO Research Queensland.
I am, yes.
How long have you been involved with the organisation?
It's 25 years this year.
Whoa.
Yes. yes, spent a lot of time in the subject, inhabiting it, I call it. It becomes a lifestyle after a while. But, yeah, I got involved, actively involved in 1988, where I actually went along to the first UFO meeting and immediately got onto the committee and became active straight away. But really, you know, I've often thought about this. I tell this story sometimes, that I remember as a kid sitting outside looking at the stars, and I used to think, is there someone out there on, you know, on a planet out there looking at Earth, wondering, is there someone on Earth looking back at them, you know? So I used to, and I used to think that's a very strange thing for a little child to think, but that's what I did.
Oh, that's cool. Now, I was looking at your website and UFO Research Queensland has been going since 1956.
Yes, I know. It's a long time.
I was blown out. Now, would that be, like, I've looked at, you know, a lot of the groups in Australia, but I don't know of any group that's gone back that far. Is it the longest running organisation that you know of?
As far as I know, the Cleveland, Ohio UFO group is the oldest group. Yeah. I think they started early in 1956 and our group was established in July 1956. So there's not much of a difference. But UFO Research Queensland is a it's been running continuously since 1956, and that's the claim to fame, I guess you could call it. But
awesome.
And that takes a lot of blood, sweat, and tears from people to do that.
It does. Like, I know the work that goes into it from when I used to investigate UFOs and paranormal activity, and just the sort of manpower and the time that everyone, you know, has got to put in, the money and effort, because you know, it's, you don't make money out of anything in this. You're lucky to make money off a book, let alone the resources you've got to put towards petrol and phone calls and driving and all that type of thing. So it would probably be the longest running group in Australia, wouldn't it?
I think continuously running, yeah. I think I'm not aware of a group in Australia that was established before then, no. But, you know, I wonder about that sometimes, because this group, it was handed the legacy of the contactees through George Adamski, because he came out here to Australia, and this group really, you know, handled that legacy in a very well rounded fashion. And I think that that continued through the group until I actually joined in 88, because they kept the contactee part of ufology alive. And I think that's really attractive. And we had a meeting, our last meeting in November, and we had Warren Aston come along and speak about the Amicizia case, which is in Italy. We've been going on since the 50s. And there are a couple hundred people involved with supposedly human-looking ETs. And whenever we have a topic like that, it just brings people out of the woodwork. They're fascinated by that, you know. It's something that grabs your attention. I know when I got involved, the contactees grabbed my attention, because the extraterrestrial societies that they spoke about were almost utopian, some of those. And I think that's really close to the human heart, utopia. You know, we want that.
Yeah.
So we sort of crave it, and we want to draw it to us. So I think that's why the contactees were so popular.
But
they sort of got driven underground.
That's fascinating, that aspect of it, because a lot of the time I don't know how to say it, it's sort of like a lot of UFO organisations or groups, they're not willing to really go there. They're willing to go with lights in the sky, photographic and video evidence, and have that tested and that sort of thing, but a lot of people aren't willing to go there. And yes, everyone, I think, you know, it's just logic that things have to be vented. You know, it's not like you're going to just chuck every Joe and back anybody up. Like I've been lucky to have Alan Ferguson on my case with his expertise, and I know that, you know, you've got to put your name to something, but just a UFO group even just looking or wanting to at least, you know, give somebody a go just to talk about their experiences or bring that aspect into it, because it's, as we both know, it's more behind what's behind the crafts than, you know, oh, it's all about little green men and lights. It's a lot bigger picture in that. Now, you've had experiences and you do a lot of healing type work, hypnotherapy, Reiki, and that, and many other aspects of healing. How did you get interested to the point where you are now? Like, there's not just the aspect of interested in doing what you do, like UFO, partaking in a UFO group, but the personal drive and the experiences. Would you like to go into sort of what's led you to
get
where you are now?
People often ask me, you know, how do you keep doing what you do? And I have to say, it would be a calling, but I got started through, I'd actually done a 3-year home Bible study course and with a religious group, and it was a weekly basis for a few hours every week for 3 years. But after a period of time, I started looking at the descriptions of angelic visitations for myself, and thinking, well, you know, this looks more akin to extraterrestrial contact to me, because people would be talking about being falling down, being paralyzed, you know, in the presence of these beings. They'd be whisked away and taken somewhere and maybe brought back to where they left, or sometimes taken to another place. And we all, you know, we all know the stories of books written by possible extraterrestrials in the Bible, but I lived it myself. I went through the scriptures myself, and I looked at those and I thought, yeah, there really is something in this. And I have wondered, even today I was thinking about this show, and I was thinking about, you know, how much extraterrestrial life has infiltrated human society. And I don't mean that in a negative way, although it could be, but, you know, in all aspects, how they have, purely just by showing up in our skies, have affected us, you know, how they have interacted with us and become part of our culture, become part of our spirituality, become part of our religious ideas. You know, they've got a lot to answer for, Peter.
Yeah. No, I agree. And there's like the oneness aspect that, you know, it comes into it too, that we're all interconnected. And I've looked into the Bible, like I've read it the whole thing many times, and there's a lot of people that are Christians or whatnot, and I've asked them, have you even read it? And they, from front to back, and they're like, no, but it always got me, like Moses looking down the round earth, Ezekiel, and, you know, the wheel that comes down, and then Jesus saying, yeah, you're all gods. You know, these are little things where, you know, even with, I forget who it was in the jail, and, you know, this type of being came in and pulled him out of the jail cell and all this, and the security guard or the guards were still asleep and all that type of thing. There's all these little things that, you know, do connect straight up to it. And, you know, you've got the Pleiades and Orion mentioned in the Bible, all these different aspects. And then you go into things like the Mahabharata, there's these aspects again, and Muhammad talking to Gabriel, which you got Gabriel in the Bible as well. So you got the Islam, it's like all cultures from all around the world have been seeded with similar information. And I can understand totally where you're going with that, because I looked to that for many years myself, and you can just see it straight up.
From that point though, you know, I made a very quick entry into the abduction phenomenon and worked a lot with people who've had close encounters there. And, you know, when I first started reading those stories, my gut feeling was these aren't extraterrestrials, these are entities. Whether that's true or not, I still haven't been able to figure it out. But certainly trying to find answers to that subject, which really hijacked my life for many years, probably like a lot of UFO researchers, I started delving into shamanism. And shamanism is thought to be the earliest religion that's understood by human beings, and all religions sprung from that. And then I looked at the close encounter experiences, and they had the classic template of a shamanic initiation experience where people are, you know, they're called by the spirits or dragged off by the spirits sometimes, and symbolically, you know, dismembered, where the, which is really represents like a death, and then they're put back together and they have a rebirth. And then they're taken back to their tribe, and they can then talk to the tribe about what they had learned through their experience. They'd never really fully assimilate back into their tribe. They sort of tend to live on the outer. And I think anyone who's had a close encounter might relate to that, because, and I've always felt that a really important part of a UFO group's role is to bring people who've had close encounters back in from the cold. You know, we've got the general public over here, we bring them up to where we are, and then we bring the people who are out in the cold back into society, and we mix them up, we put them together and reintegrate. And I guess I want to do that because I'm a therapist anyway, and that's part of my nature. But I think it's so important because the people who've had close encounters are like those shamans, I guess, if you like. They certainly have shamanic personalities, and they need to be brought back into the human tribe and tell their story so that we can integrate it, and then we get on with it.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, I totally understand, and just from personal experience, I can understand what you're saying with, you know, being on the outskirts of society and need to be brought back in, because I've felt like that and still do feel on the outer of all that's going on. And it's good that you look at it like that. That's a different perspective that I haven't heard before. So where did all this go from looking into the shamanism and the Bible text? Where did it sort of lead you from there? Because this is all meant to be how it all plays out, and it's interesting, everyone's personal story.
Is, isn't it? Well, I had a close encounter back in no, I think it was about 1990 or 1991. I didn't actually record it at the time because I just went straight into denial about it. And I told myself it was a hallucination for 15 years. But what happened with that experience was I was asleep in bed one night with my ex-husband, and I woke up in the early hours of the morning, and I saw these three small beings beside the bed, only within about a 3.5 foot space. And one was standing in the front, and two were behind, and they were looking down at me. And when I woke up, I don't know why I woke up, but I did. Immediately, I was wide awake. And when I saw them, and they're only about, you know, 3.5 feet tall with the inverted pear-shaped heads, like you typically the grey types that are described, and they had big dark eyes, although I couldn't see their face clearly, but I somehow was aware they had these large dark eyes that sort of, you know, the almond shape that wrap around.
Could you tell if they were actually grey or brown? Because I've
They
come
were
across different
dark. They
colours.
were,
Yeah.
yeah, just really dark.
Because I've come across both, but mainly my interactions are with tall and small ones that have got like a weird brown. So, yeah, no, there's something I always ask.
I think they could have been a very dark brown. They were,
Yeah.
it was hard because the street light was out shining through the window behind them, so there the front of them was in
Yeah.
shadow,
Yeah.
but certainly really, really dark. And it was, I was immediately terror struck. And I did. I had heard people talk about the terror that they felt, but then I got a dose of it myself, and it was exactly the same as you could imagine if you woke up and there's this huge tiger just sitting there looking at you,
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
staring. You know what I mean?
I know what you're
And
saying.
yeah, and it's that. It was the same. Oh my God, you can't do anything. And I was just having this conversation with one of our team members because he'd had an experience too. Exactly the same process, anyway. And I was just sort of dumbfounded. And I what I did a really strange thing was I pulled the sheet up over my head and I started saying the Lord's Prayer. I had no memory of going to sleep. The next morning, well, supposedly the next thing I remember was like that immediate. I woke up, it was morning.
And
I
no
had
time, it skipped. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
no memory of what had happened
Yep.
until later that day in the afternoon, and then bang, it hit me, you know, and I went, oh my God, that happened last night. No, that couldn't have happened. And I immediately went into denial, and it took me a really, really, really long time
Now,
to come out about that.
Is that because that's happened to me with a few experiences that I will have exact almost par for what you said, except for saying the Lord's Prayer. I've had a few experiences like everything you just described. And I'll remember what's happened, but later on that day, it's like full recollection of before. Is that common, sort of like a flashback or a memory glitch where all of a sudden you remember? Is that common? Because a couple of people have said to me that, like what you've just said and what's happened to me, but I haven't talked to as many people probably as you have. Is it common, that type of memory remembrance later on?
It is, but not necessarily the next day. Some people will remember like weeks later, some people months later, or some people will just say, something happened, I know something happened, I don't know what, I'm not consciously aware, but I feel it, you know, I feel it. What, you know, I don't know whether that's from an external source that memory is suppressed, or it's our own personal coping mechanism, our subconscious, you know, with trauma, you suppress memories. Yeah. And then for whatever reason, in my case, the next day, if it was my own subconscious, somewhere in my subconscious said, it's okay, she can remember that, you can remember this and you won't freak out. But I did. I didn't really freak out, but I certainly went into denial. But eventually I spoke to people who'd had similar experiences, and I just had to. It was like the more I denied it, the more they came knocking on the door. You know, it was like, wake up, Cheryl, wake up. You know, it wasn't that I invalidated them. It was just that I somehow strangely invalidated myself for some reason. But it was a really strange response. And maybe, Peter, you had that too. I've spoken to people who've said, I don't know why I responded like that, pulled the sheet up or just didn't do anything, because it wasn't in comparison to the experience. So with me, the little beings were so small, and I'm not a small woman. I'm quite tall. And I could have got up and just kicked them or punched them, you know.
Yeah, well, I've got a mate who's actually done that. And then he's been, with the reptilian he did, and he got punched back and woke up the next day and the bruise was there, you know. But with myself personally, it's weird because I have a different effect with the greys. I don't know if it's their energy, how they consciously interact with me on whatever level they do. I don't resonate well with them. I don't think they're bad. I don't think they're good, because there's so many people say there's one type of grey, and I know of about 12 races personally. So it's been a lot of interactions. But then if I'm talking about my interactions with human type beings or light beings, I don't have that. I'm just blissed out, full of love, all that type of thing. So it's totally different, the experiences I've had with the greys to the other beings, even types of reptilians I've interacted with. One group was cool, the other two weren't so cool. But when I was a child, I used to wake up, there would be a grey on my left, and wouldn't freak out, but I'd just be like, what the hell's going on? Grab the sheets, not pull them up, but I'd turn, and then there'd be a light coming around the edge of the curtains, and I couldn't tell if that would be the sun or a craft, because the sun used to come through that way, but it wasn't that bright.
Mm.
Other interactions I've had with them, with the greys, there was one night I heard something swishing out the carpet out of my room, and I walked out, and I saw the back of something, and I was just started breathing, had to go back in the room, shut the door, and then I conned myself going, what's it going to do? And I went back out, nothing was there, but as I went through the house into each room, I was getting scared again. But it's really weird. There's been some interactions with actual greys where it's been pretty cool, but usually I just don't resonate well with them. So that's what I can say about with them. So the reactions we all have, I think, different types of greys, different types of reactions of how it sort of resonates with you. I don't know if it's energy or consciousness, like I said, of how it's interacted, but
I think maybe just the level of terror, because for me it was very primal. It was a primal feeling of it was beyond conscious awareness. It was just primal fear, really basic. It was a sense of that. It was very strong, very powerful.
Well, there's been a time when I was in the room and two walked in, and they were very little. They were about three and a half foot. And I was scared shitless that I just froze. then the next day, like within no time, it seemed like I was laying there, froze. Next second, it's daytime and I'm upside down on the bed.
Mm.
But I don't know if it was because I was shit scared or was there something going on to paralyze, because I literally couldn't move. And I thought, well, I've heard of people being scared so much that they couldn't move. But then I thought, was that me really? Because I was scared. Or was it them doing something so, you know, you're paralyzed basically? It's one of those things, I guess, we sort of won't know unless we're out of body, you know, connected with all. We'll sort of have answers to anything we want, but...
From there, I sort of moved on to trying to understand what that might be. You know, if it's not extraterrestrial, what is it? Some sort of something that's manifesting from the collective consciousness? Is it some people talk about past life connections. I really don't know, but I do know it's a very old phenomenon. You can track it back through, you know, cave art. You can track it back through, like I'm talking about these unusual looking beings. You can track it right back through shamanic experiences that some people have had in the past. What it is, it's so easy to say, oh, these are extraterrestrials.
It's a lot more complicated than that.
It is. It's like a ball of string that's been, you know, you wind it up and all different colours with it, but you know, you unravel that and you got a mess, which is exactly what we've got, you know. Yeah. Because we're trying to understand something. And a friend of mine said recently, you know, trying to understand the UFO subject is like scooping a fish up out of the ocean, putting it in a glass bowl, taking it into the middle of town, putting it down on a busy road and say, there you go. You know, like it's so difficult. We don't seem to have the ability, the perception. We may not even be equipped to understand the subject.
Like Albert Einstein used to say, you can't solve a problem with the same consciousness that created it. Now, if we're thinking with the level of consciousness we are, it's very limited, because I used to say to a lot of paranormal and UFO groups and people studying that I cover both, and because I've experienced both a hell of a lot, whether it's like the high strangeness I get, my house isn't haunted, but the high strangeness, if a paranormal investigator came here, they're going to think it's haunted, which it's not. It's types of high strangeness. With the aspect of beings being able to appear out of nothing, same with the crafts, what I do get is that there are interdimensional and extraterrestrial beings, time traveler beings. Yes, it's my own perspective because I've experienced it. That's my reality, and I can't prove that. You know, I've got evidence, but it's not evidence to say this is, you know, fact. It's my truth. But there's something, because there is the spirit realm and all that, but whatever mechanism, the extraterrestrials, the interdimensional beings, time travelers, spirits, and then there's many things that I'm sure that are out there that I haven't even been exposed to, whatever mechanism all those types of beings use is the same, I think, to manifest in whatever reality, because a ghost appears out of thin air. Now, there's intelligent and residual hauntings, but they, you know, a ghost and an ET can use, you know, they'll manifest out of thin air, and whatever they're using is that the same mechanism, you know, to manifest, which is interesting to me because it just doesn't stop. But thinking outside the box like yourself do, which is good, because a lot of people in the field just think it's just ET. And when you get into what you've been through and I've been through, you realise it's a whole mixed ball.
It is.
A lot more.
It certainly is, yeah. Yeah, so trying to unravel it all is the key. I hope we can do it one day. But in the meantime, what's happening is people are being transformed by these experiences. You know, they're having physical changes. They have these, they'll have after effects like immune disorders will arise, or they'll have, one of the things that they often get is photosensitivity, which is what I developed. I don't know if you did. And then they'll have the emotional changes and the behavioral changes. So you'll have, you know, people can go through grief. They can have a dark night of the soul experience where they'll get to a point where, you know, everything seems meaningless because their reality's been shattered and they just don't know what to believe in anymore or what to accept or what's real. And they start questioning everything, which is never a bad thing, I think. But, you know, sometimes it can be very overwhelming for people. And then you have the spiritual changes in people. You know, you have people who, and I know with myself, I started off in this subject with who are they, where are they from, and why are they here, to who am I, where am I from, and why am I here? You know, so it's a big package, the UFO subject. It's no wonder that a lot of people don't want to open the gate and walk down that path. And there's a lot of competing emotional commitments for people to look at this subject. It's like, if I open that gate and walk down that path, well, maybe my friends won't like me. They'll think I'm weird, or, you know, maybe my family will reject me, or I just won't feel like I fit in. I'll be ostracized and I'll feel isolated. And there's all these reasons not to go down that path in society. But, you know, a lot of people are dragged kicking and screaming. They just have to go down it because of their experiences. But other people are, you know, they've been born being interested in the subject too, which I think is wonderful. We need people like that. But the changes that people go through, and how they become less materialistic, how there's a tendency to become vegetarians, how they develop this deep and profound reverence for all life. They change their lifestyle, they change their behavior, and it's beautiful to see because they have this great flow-on effect in society, and they do change people around them, you know. And if they can't, or if they don't, and if those people reject them, they just, you know, just go on and develop a new set of people that they can hang around with. So they come to UFO meetings and go, wow, these people are weird, I love them, you know, and they find a new home.
Yeah, it's great. You know. Is it starting to get dark up there?
It is. Would you like me to put the light on?
Can you just put it on quickly if that's all right? Because the screen started to get pixelated and I thought it might be getting dark.
Hold on.
You all right? Ah, that's beautiful. Clear as now.
Better.
Beautiful as clear as. Now, I totally understand what you've just said in those terms. Like, personally, I heard Rodwell's talk to me about is the sort of really good evidence for a contactee to sort of know what's they're at and if it's really is the personal change. Like me personally, I was a rap artist. I used to be a bit off the wall, and it's sort of funny because all the old friends I had talk to me now and I can't be around them and they can't be around me because it's not the same person, as they've said.
Exactly.
And I've told people, you know, talk to my family if you want, because they will just say it's not him, but it is, and it's better. And that whole aspect of, you know, spiritual change, even health-wise, all these different things come to the plate where they sort of they evolve in a new direction. It's like they're awake and this is a new path.
The interesting thing for me, Peter, is, or a couple of things actually, is I've found over since probably I really started looking at the transformational natures in about the year 2000, 1999, 2000, and I found that people who report close encounters almost are creative people. They're highly creative people, or they were creative and after their experiences that became magnified. So it's no surprise to me that you said you were a rapper.
I play guitar, I play bass, I play drums, piano.
Absolutely,
it's just artist and all that sort of thing, and it has been amplified, although I used to rap about stupid stuff and now I see it as stupid. I didn't at the time. But now I can't rap anymore because it's not me. It's not who I really am, but it's evolved in other ways. Yeah.
But I think that creativity, I think there's a reason for that. I think that people who are highly creative are usually spiritually engaged people, or that's what I've found anyway, people who report close encounters. They perhaps are more open to contact because they're using different aspects of their brain. And I've often thought about maybe these experiences have a whole braining effect for people. You know, they balance out the left and right brain a bit more, you know. And so that makes them even better candidates for having ongoing contact, you know. That's a possibility. And the other thing is that people also have paranormal side effects, as I'm probably sure you're probably aware of. So they become electrically sensitive. You know, they can wear watches and they stop working. You know, they interfere.
I've stopped it. I don't bother watches anymore.
It interferes with electronics, but they can become precognitive. They can have out-of-body experiences. They've often, and this is something I found really early in the piece, is when I started doing investigations in about 89, is that at least half the people who report close encounters have had near-death experience, at least one. And I find that fascinating.
Well,
and
I have two. I have two.
You have. So have I.
Yeah. Mm. Now, when, like, being where you are at now, and this has happened to me, so that's why I'm asking, is when you sort of awaken and you're a few years after your experiences, when they've sort of consciously, you know that they're real, have you looked back to when you were younger and sort of connected some dots to some trippy stuff that sort of happened, but you never thought much of until later on?
That's a difficult question because there were mental health problems in my family, and it wouldn't be surprising if that was part of the reason why I sit around and ponder about the universe, why things are the way they are, and why my life is the way it is. But it's certainly a reason why I took a deep interest in behavioural therapies. In answer to that question, not so much when I was a child, but I have had ongoing strange things happen, and certainly. Like just recently, I woke up one morning and I had four red pin dots on my leg in a perfect square. And I've had, I had a puncture mark behind my knee, which just appeared out of nowhere. So I don't know what those things mean. I know people report it, but I don't tend to run and say, well, this means this is still going on. But it's just weird stuff, that I don't understand why. What it's all about, really. But did you have a particular idea in mind when you said that about childhood?
It's just that as I've moved forward, like there was one thing, this is just an example that was in my hypnosis with Mary, is that I used to see Kurt Cobain in my room, and he was a singer of Nirvana, and he was dead at the time, and I'm like, but it was real. Like I've seen a lot, and I knew this was as real as anything, but it came out that it was a grey, and I didn't think... until even the last year, even after this, my experiences, I didn't think that could have been connected to this. I thought it was some weird paranormal thing. I'm not saying it was Kurt Cobain, but later on I thought, well, hey, maybe it could have projected itself. And I put that question into the hypnosis because it was playing with me. But there's other things I've picked up on as a kid that later on I look back and I go, that's what it was. Like there's this connection to... not really screen memory, but more of a projection of something else rather than what the real, than showing what's behind the projection. One thing I was going to go into, because you've gone in the auditory healing and that type of thing as well. I started to do remote viewing and meditation at the same time. Now, looking back, I've realised that I've been able to, astral travel in a lot of things. It's sort of, whatever's meant to happen, it will happen. So usually I'll meditate. If I'm meant to astral travel, connect with beings, because I do contact initiation stuff as well, sort of CE5, but, it's not guaranteed to happen. It's just, if it's meant to happen, it will. But I found that intent has a lot to do with how things can happen. And that if I hadn't done my meditation and remote viewing at the same time, I probably wouldn't have been able to astral travel and do what I do now. And I don't see it as a coincidence. I think there's a synchronicity, but it was meant to play out that way. How has the healing part been for you? Did you get into healing after being connected with UFO research and being into the phenomena, or was it sort of, a hand-in-hand thing?
Yeah, no, I got involved after... I went down the healing path after I got involved with UFO Research Queensland. It's a bit strange. I was, people who have close encounters, or let's just say people in general, they're sort of moving along in life like this, but then they have an encounter of some description, and then boom, that broad path of life tends to really narrow, and they tend to go in that direction. And I've noticed it over and over again, the healing, get involved in meditation, like I said before, tendency towards vegetarianism, but And I'll get involved in all sorts of alternative things. They'll even become, they can become social activists as well. And they, and you might remember in the Roper report that was done in 1991, there was, they found that people who reported close encounters were the, what they termed the influentials, where they would be the letter writers. They'd get on committees. They'd, you know, they'd get involved with the schools. You know, they were
Doing
socially
something
active.
active, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but they had a concern, you know, they were socially concerned people, and I think that's true of the UFO community. You know, that those, the people who get involved are socially concerned people. They care about what's going on planet Earth, and I say, great. You know,
Yeah.
we need more of them.
More of them, definitely. Now, is like it's never once you sort of have these type of experiences, like personally for me doesn't stop. I can have anybody around any day of the week, they're going to see orbs or a craft. Like that's basically a weekly thing, which is just ridiculous. But there's a lot more behind just seeing the crafts, because there are interactions that go on another level. But is that like a thing for you? Like you're saying it's continuous. Is it like a full-on type thing for you, or is it sort of just spread out and happens when it sort of, you know, happens? That's how you look at it.
No, I only had that one initial experience that I told you about, where I woke up and saw them standing beside me. But I've since then I've had ongoing paranormal experiences.
Would you say high strangeness?
Yeah,
Yeah, yep.
yes, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, where I'd be aware of you know, presences in the house. At times, I could. I it's strange. I would get messages about people, but they would appear in my mind in text. There's only there's I know people do get that, but it's not that common. You know, at times my, you know, certainly really sensitive to other people's negative feelings if they, if they're upset or they're
Yeah.
sad or all that sort of stuff, or angry, or I couldn't be around them.
Same, yep.
Yeah, so a whole lot of things happened. I remember one time that I, you know, I was lying in bed, and I thought my husband got up, and as he walked past, he just sort of grabbed my ankle like this, like a loving grab. And except I turned over and went, oh, he's lying right here beside me in the bed. That wasn't him. You know, like just unusual stuff that it's not normal.
Yeah, no, it's very similar here. Like I've got a friend down from Sydney at the moment. Last time she was here, it was like a child grasped her hand, and makes me think it was the kids. Well, you know, because that's part of what's going on too. And then, you know, people see beings in the house or orbs or
Yeah.
just stuff moving, and
Yeah.
it's cool because others are witnessing it. But it's, you know, I always thought when things really picked up, I thought is it. I learn now not to expect anything, because it's just out there what can happen. There's sort of no roster to how things. It's just whatever goes, and you know it's a pretty full on thing. But it's good that other people witness it around here, and that's just the way it is here. Now,
If I could just add to that, Peter,
yep.
I think it's really important to pay attention to the paranormal, in regard to the UFO phenomenon, the high strangeness. I personally, I think that we're going to find the answers in the high strangeness.
Yep.
And I'm always reminded of one particular case many years ago, in the mid-90s. I bought a property and ran a New Age centre. And one of the events I held there was a night on near-death experiences. And a woman came along, and she told this story of how her child had died, and she went to the funeral, and she lay down on the bed, and her heart stopped, and the next thing she was out of her body, and she's walking along a path, like you hear often in near-death experiences, with the child in her hand, and she's taking the child to a being who's going to take the child off her, which she did, which the being did, and then she says, okay, it'll be all right now. And then she turned around and started walking back on the path. But as she did, she sees this landed UFO in this out-of-body state. And she wasn't a UFO person. She just said, I saw this round craft. She said it was very strange, and it was all white. And she walked up these stairs and went inside. And when she went inside, she was met by these ETs who were not human looking, but were humanoid. And they put her on this table, and they did some sort of medical examination. But this is her in an out of body state. So, and then after that, she left, and she came back, and her heart started beating, and she woke up on the bed. I have not heard anyone else talk about cases like that.
Well, I've had stuff where, for example, like lately I was on a craft. It was the middle of the day. Like a lot of my interactions with these beings, some of them appear as human, but they're actual light beings. These will be during the day. And I went to meditate, and straight away, instantaneously, I opened my eyes and I was on a craft. Now it looked like a flying saucer, but it was like there was a shape to it, but it was made out of a white light. Now, I was thinking it was me physically there, but it was really my being. Now, the other beings there with me were light beings, and I've communicated with one of them a lot of times. But what was weird is that I don't know what I used to perceive what I was seeing because it wasn't my physical body, but I was seeing stuff, but I could it sort of had a lot more awareness. It was sort of unbounded, not fully unbounded like in states I have been in meditation, but this was limited compared to that, but not as limited as being in this body. What was weird is that if I focused on the craft, it was physical, but if I sort of defocused off it in whatever I was using to perceive this, I could see through the craft and see my house below. And then if I defocused off my house, I was physically in the craft again. And that's where I've had a lot of sort of both that it's taken me a while to pick up going, hey, because a lot of my experiences are the physical aspect, but then there is the aspect that comes into it where it's been sort of the spiritual experience. But I've got recollections of a lot of things, whether it's past lives or even making a deal to come here, which is goes into a lot of detail. But there is that aspect, and Rodwell sort of helped me get in tune with that part because there was so many facets to what's going on with me. It wasn't just a normal getting taken. Not that any of this is normal in any sense of the word, but it was a lot more out there than what I thought. And there's people that say to me, oh, I know what's going on. And I say, what, you're coming to me for answers and I don't even know 0.0001 out of 1,000% of what's going on. You just can't know what's going on. And that's very interesting you brought that up. Is there many people that you know that have been sexually abused when younger that are experiences? Because I'm finding that it's not common, but there are a majority. I was myself, but I'm finding that a majority, and I don't know if that's got to do with being able to, it's some in that happening, it's like a mechanism to activate being able to lose earth vibration, sort of earth things are being able to move out. Not that I want any names or anything like that, but you know what I mean? Just sort of a ballpark if it's common at all for yourself.
Absolutely, it's often there's a trauma in the childhood. It doesn't have to be sexual abuse. It can be verbal abuse or emotional abuse, but it can be any sort of trauma like that. It can also be illness in the family. There can be alcoholism in the family. And during this trauma, traumatic time of a child's life, and you have to remember, and you might know this yourself, that even though you're there as a child and as an adult, people will say, oh, that's traumatic. But as a child, somehow we magically cope with these
We
things
don't
and we
know
don't
any different,
see
really.
it as trauma at the time until later on someone says, that's trauma. So, but it certainly exists. And if you read Dr. Ken Ring's book, The Amiga Project, he talks about that too, because he looks at the connection between near-death experiences and people who report close
It's
encounters.
not wine, it's sparkling water, just for those out there who's going, he's getting on the pitch. Yeah, know of him, yeah.
Yes, and actually, I had Ken stayed with me when he was out here back in '95, because he also came to he was involved with the New Age Centre that I had, and he spoke about near-death experiences and the blind. But he was very interested in that whole subject, and I thought it was such a shame that he dropped, dropped that the research that he was doing. But a few other people have taken it on board. But oh, Peter, it's just such a big subject, It's and I was going to make a comment before too that we also do have to keep in mind that although we talk about spiritual in regard to the UFO subject, it can also be hugely advanced technology, which is going to appear spiritual to us, or
Oh
what
yeah,
we call
it
spiritual,
most definitely. Like that craft I was talking to you about, and it'd been mentioned to me before, that was actually created by consciousness. But when you go down the levels, some are like, you go into the crafts being alive, different types of tech, symbiotic technology. This now, although we've got jets that are being fired by the military, that are the shooting mechanism is activated by thought, you know, these are things that are coming into play now that it's almost like, and I've said this at talks before, that almost everything that we see is science fiction back in the sci-fi shows going back 20, 30 years, almost all of that has come into reality except for being able to travel vast distances in space and the ET reality. Almost everything that we can think of has come into being. So when looking into it like that, you're exactly right. There is any there was some science fiction writer, I can't remember, but he used to say that any advanced type of technology would look like magic to us. I mean, if we went back 1,000 years with a torch, that'd be like, you know, this must be God, because how the hell can you do that? So there is that aspect. But then it's like, I know about beings in between dimensions, I know about beings within dimensions and extraterrestrials, and this for me, you know, it's a vast, complex issue. Then you bring spirits in, and this is where I applaud you too, because there's a lot of people that don't want to go into the paranormal aspect of the reality of what we study and experience. But it is all connected, and I think the more people that look at both sides, they might get a better understanding, not a knowingness, because I think that's sort of blocked with our consciousness at the level we're at. But it sort of opens up a lot more gates, and maybe those gates lead to another gate that can help get to a further understanding.
I think that anyone who wants to get involved in UFO research, they have to have eclectic knowledge. They have to, you know, they have, I think they have to be aware of, educate themselves about the paranormal, what can happen, about behavioral sciences, about sociology, about history, anthropology. You know, it's such a vast subject. You've got to have a collective background that can give you the tools so that you, when you come across something, you go, oh, you know. And it can be something as simple as having some knowledge about photography, you know,
Yes,
or
exactly.
software, or, you know, computer software and how things can be generated. I mean, we have to know so much.
Yeah, like I get some weird stuff, and it sort of just make. And I'm not a photographic expert or analyst at all, but it's funny. I'll get photos, and I'll be like, you know, that's a reflection in a mirror, and then I'll say that to them, and they go, "Oh, you're right." And it's like, oh, how can you pick? But anything that anybody can bring to the plate, we've all got something about us that we can special. And I say to people, you sort of have to cover everything, but if you're going to sort of go into it looking for some truth, cover everything, but really specialize in just a few areas. You know, really just focus your attention there and still cover everything, but really just drive, whether it was photographic, you know, stuff or scientific aspect or contactees. You know, there's sort of the few areas. For myself, it's sort of CE5 and healing is where I've gone now. I used to sort of do everything, but being awake and, you know, your direction changed. You've sort of do have to look into everything. I think you've got to keep an open mind and not go into it with a preconceived notion of what you think it is, because it sort of limits the truth. Well, you won't get to a truth, because what's going, you're going into a situation trying to study something with a preconceived notion. Why studied it if you think you already know what it is? And you sort of, you know, you're sort of narrowing down and limiting what the possibilities are. But with your group, is there, with UFO Research Queensland, have you just got a pretty good variety of, you know, people sort of in all different areas?
Yes, absolutely. Come to the meetings, yeah, members, yeah. People who come are typically, like I was saying before, spiritually engaged people. Some people do go to the spiritual church. A lot of people meditate. But we have, you know, there are business people and there are teachers and there are people, business owners. There are, you know, people work for the government. There's all sorts of people, you know, broad range of people who come to our meetings who have this, develop this deep interest in the subject, and they've been coming for a while because of that. But just going back to the transformational nature of of the phenomenon, the other thing to add to that too is that while we're drawing from all this background, we've also got to understand that the people that we're talking to who are reporting close encounters, they are also on a journey of change. You know, so while we're interacting with them, they can be anywhere on that journey.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so we can have, and I've stayed in touch with a few people over the years, and I've watched how their lives have changed. And this is what convinces me that something real happened is because the changes that they undergo are lasting and they're permanent.
And
you don't,
they evolve, though, like the changing evolves as well in a good direction most of
yes,
the time.
Yes, yeah, I think so. And somehow the encounters hothouse those people. They put them under pressure, and out of that, it speeds up the process of change for them, which for all of us might, you know, on a positive path, we might start off as a child here and end up as an evolved adult here. But when you have an encounter like that, it speeds up that whole process and it potentiates it so that you change so quickly because you have to grow and expand to be able to encompass and integrate your experience.
Yeah.
Otherwise you end up with a piece of yourself split off forever, you know, like shamans talk about parts of the soul are split off.
Yeah.
And you have to do a soul retrieval for them, and you don't want that. So when people are potentiated, it's amazing things happen. And it's like when trees are under duress during drought, they just throw off all their seeds because they think they're going to die. But all these trees that sprout are bigger and better than the original tree, you know, that
yeah.
dies off. So it's a bit like that with people who report encounters.
Yeah. Now, well, it showed me something good what you just said about your personality, about where the experiencer is at their evolving point. Because what's pissed me off, and I speak my mind, I won't name names, but what's got me with this arena of ufology or whatever is there's a lot of arguing this and that. And I think everyone's going to be open-minded and just accept things the way they are. But what got me is that a lot of people sort of wanted to get into my case, use their name, get out there for the wrong reasons. And the whole time what I needed was support. I needed somebody I could talk to. There was so many times I was in tears. I just wanted the world to just blow up. I couldn't care about anyone at times because I wasn't getting that. And then I come across people like Rodwell, and now I'm saying you because I can see that your intentions are good and right because of what you just said is where they're at on their personal journey. And a lot of the time, even with hypnosis, there'll be some hypnotherapists where they're doing their job, but what happens is they won't push the barrier of why what happened. They'll go, oh, so this happened. And this is good with people that are in support groups. They push the barrier. Not too much. They let sort of the contact their experiencer go where they may because, you know, it's up to them. But the thing that's really got me is there's sort of, you know, people don't think about what people like myself and other experiences go through. And that support is so great once you get it because you don't feel crazy. You feel there is somebody that you can tell it all out to because a lot of the time things can be so tripped out, as I've said to you, that I think people don't lie. I think they hold back. How tripped out the experience was because it's just so out there that we could be the best science fiction writers out there, quite frankly, with how tripped out things just get out there.
Yeah.
But it's good that you looked at that where people are at because each experiencer is on a different level, you know. And like I spoke before we got on the show, there was the three phases I talked about where you're scared, then you're pissed off, and then you embrace. And I found that common with everyone. And when you're scared, you are scared, you're crying, you're a wreck, you can't function. And when you're pissed off, I think nobody gets more pissed off than experiences because it's real. It's like you're telling everyone that the world is round and they still think it's flat. And then you sort of get past that. And I think that when you get to the embracing stage, it's beautiful because you can handle the experiences even better because you're at that level now. You're still going to have that weird scaredness and fear every now and then, but you're able to handle it a lot better. So it's good that you cover a lot of that. Now, is there many experiences that have come, like, is there a lot going on in Queensland at the moment? Because personally down this way, like, there's a bit going on, but I always look at how much activity sort of from Melbourne following the coast all the way up to Queensland, like Sydney, and then all the way up the Sunshine Coast and going up to Cairns. Now, yes, there's most of the Australian population there, but there just seems to be a hell of a lot of stuff happening always up and down, you know, sort of from above Sydney, even though there's a lot in Sydney, all the way up the coast where you are. Like, there's sightings, but is there a lot of people coming to you with experiences?
Not as many as there used to be, that's for sure. I mean, we had so many in the 90s. It all happened in the 90s, but I didn't have a life in the 90s. But it sort of settled down. We still do get people coming forward and saying they've had experiences, but I think because the way that people can communicate has changed a lot since then, that people who have encounters, they can actually email the author of a book. These days, which you couldn't do before. They could send emails to Whitley Strieber, or they could send them to Bud Hopkins when he was alive, and they stopped reporting as much directly to a UFO group, which previously was the only point for them to report to. But there's certainly been a lot of activity on in the Gold Coast area over the last two years. And that's thanks to a particular journalist down there who has he rings up all the time and asks for sightings and that have happened, and he makes sure that there's articles in the paper all the time. And if you're listening, Andrew Potts, thank you very much. Of course, when that goes in the paper, people contact us and they tell us about their experiences. And we've had quite a few interesting ones that have been reported to us these last couple of years. And if I may, I'd like to tell
Yeah,
you.
go I know, because this is what I want to do as well. Being doing Australian stuff is get Australian stuff out there, what's going on. So get into it, yeah.
Well, one of the ladies who contacted me was she was probably in the late 60s, maybe 70, and she had been on a holiday years before with a daughter over to Spain, and they'd stayed in this place called Lloret de Mar, and there's a beach there. And she had gone out in the evening to go for a walk. And in Spain, at that beach, at night, people walk up and down and promenade, and there's a lot of noise there at night. But she was walking down, and the first thing that struck her was that it was quiet, not a sound. And so she was a bit concerned. So she's sort of walking along against the building like this, thinking, "Where are the people? What's going on?" And she looks up and she sees, like, there's a bridge there, and she looks up and she sees everyone's frozen in time. There's a bus going, there's people on bicycles, there's people walking, their legs are up in the air as they're taking a step, their mouths are open while they're speaking, frozen. And she looks over and she sees on the other side of the bridge, she sees a UFO, and she's that close that she can see inside the craft, which was circular, in the windows. And she said she could see beings which had triangular shaped heads, triangular type shaped heads, upside down.
Yeah.
And she just stood there and she looked, and she watched for a while because she didn't know what to do. But then she stepped out of the shadows of where she was to get a better look. And all of a sudden, this UFO, it spat out sparks from underneath. It sort of, went on, she called it. And then it just took off up the river and disappeared. And it wasn't until it was out of sight, that everything turned back on and people started talking and walking in the buses and the traffic. And she said it gave her a hell of a fright because all of a sudden it's all, it's like on,
Yeah.
And it's, so she immediately ran over to someone and said, "Did you see that? Did you see that?" And they said, "See what?" As far as I was concerned, nothing had happened because they were frozen in time. They had no missing time.
I've
So
noticed that type of thing myself. Sorry to cut in, but I've been asked questions how long, like with one of my experiences, one of the beings I see, Lottie Sheegee, and she's actually a light being. She's not a she or a he. It's not even a name. That's how she projects. Now, it will seem like 3 to 10 minutes that I speak to her on and off at times, but at the same time, the atmosphere and everything is different. And like I said to one of my mates, it's like as if time stops. And I can't explain it, but to me, it feels how much information you would talk about in that amount of time feels like that varies in that time amount. But when I'm looking at clocks or I'm noticing things before and after, it's just like no time's existed in or stopped. I don't, yeah, that's very interesting.
So she, from there on, she walked back to the hotel and she went into the reception and said, told them the story. Of course, at that time, this is in the 70s, they said, "Oh, have another drink," and she had been living with that story, which is a powerful story,
Yeah.
For years and years and years. And when she saw something in the paper on the Gold Coast, she rang up and she told it to me. And then she rang up a couple of weeks later and she told it to me again. And another time she rang up and told me again. And it was like suddenly she found someone she could talk to, you know.
It's a lot to hold in.
I know, and it's a big thing to hold in for a long time.
For that long, yeah.
Yeah, and then a husband got on the phone and he said to me, thank you very much for listening to my wife, because even I sometimes think she's crazy, but he said, she's so much better that you've actually told that story. But that's just, it's the power of that experience, you know, and can you imagine how much that affects a person by suppressing that? You would. Suppressing that knowledge and that, you know, that experience, and not finding anyone who'd listen to you, who didn't think you're crazy. But another story was a gentleman who was actually an artist, and it was back in the mid-90s, I think it was, where he and a friend were outside near the Tweed Heads Twin Towns Club, which is down on the Gold Coast again, and they were standing outside in the evening having a cigarette, and this huge UFO appears over the water, because it's like a bit of a headland and a bay area, and it appears and it just hovers silently, and it's huge, massive, and you know, you're thinking, the power of that, why am I not hearing anything, how does it do that, you know?
Yeah.
And it's awesome, it really is awesome. And he said he could see the outside of it, it was like pearlescent, but it was black, like the dark crystal, and like a smoky quartz crystal. And it was, every now and then the outside would move and clear a bit. And he said you could see inside, and you could see people inside. And it hovered there for a while, and then it would cover back over again, and then it just took off silently, fast and silent. And it went through multi-story buildings. Didn't go around them, went right through them as if they weren't there, he said, you know.
Yeah.
So we are dealing with something that is so far advanced to us, our understanding, our knowledge, our experience, you know, that it's no wonder it's so slippery and it's so hard to grasp, you know. But, you know, I wanted to pick up on the point you said before about that support, because like that story I told you with that lady, she was so grateful to have, you know, find someone who would listen to her. But it's so true, Peter, that the UFO community really has to get its act together, and I would encourage anybody.
Thank you. Me and others in the field have been saying that, and I think what we need to learn is that we don't accept within ourselves and as a community that we don't know at all, and just be open-minded.
Yes, and I think too that, as I was saying to you before the show started, that to me it's about the power of personal disclosure, and it's about the people who've had encounters, helping them to stand in their power. Because if you want disclosure about this subject, it's those people, you get them in their power, and then you get them to stand together. Nothing's going to stop that.
Yep.
You know, but it's about giving them the support that they need. And sometimes if we have to, taking a leap of faith that what, you know, just taking them at face value, accepting what they say, and listening. And if, you know, as a friend of mine said to me once, you know, if we can't talk to the people who are talking to the aliens, then we don't deserve to talk to the aliens. And I think that's so true. We've got to give them that space and that time and that respect and listen to them so they feel validated. And in that validation comes confidence, comes self-esteem, and then kicks in their power. Because people who have close encounters are just like anybody else. They have their issues too. So when they have their encounter and they report their encounter, they're also bringing their issues with it, you know. So we've, you know, as people like myself, as a therapist and as Mary Rodwell, we've got to be very aware of that. But other people do too, you know. Yeah. Other people in the community do too. So it's all about their level of confidence and self-esteem as to how much they can stand up and talk about things. And I know people who've had experiences 20, 30 years ago, and they're still trying to find a place for themselves to belong in the UFO community, but also to feel that they can speak up and not be ridiculed after all this time, you know. Where the UFO community is today, it's evolved to today, we should be able to give them a much better platform than we did 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah. No, and I 100% agree with everything you said. And a lot of people say to me they don't know how I've got the courage to do what I do. But personally, I just don't care what others have got to think or say about. Because really, at the end of the day, what it is a fear of the unknown and the fear of what people think. And I was long past, especially when I was a rap artist, I was beyond what people thought of me. In a positive manner, because it helped me embrace me for who I am, emotionally get in touch and get to know me. And I think unless people had been through what I've been through, whether it was, you know, sexual abuse or, you know, being a rap artist, getting death threats and that, and I get death threats now from doing what I do in military interactions, you get to a point where you just say, stuff it. And I know, even if they killed me, I'm not dead. It goes on, so I'm cool with it, but I know what it's like for those who, not to the extent of walking their shoes, but I know that it's hard. And every time I do see somebody doing something like myself, I really give, you know, appreciation to them for what they're doing, because it is hard. And I can understand because a lot of the time I don't have a girlfriend, I don't have kids. A lot of people have a wife, kids, they've got a job. All that can be put at stake, and I've got nothing to lose, so I'm sort of pretty sweet where I'm sitting. So now, with the crafts you're talking about, we actually had out here out at Boner. I filmed a few crafts out there the other night with two other people when I was doing some CE5 work, and it was weird because I've had crafts land on top of me, and I'm in it when it's landed. They can't see it, but they can feel the atmosphere has changed. I can see what's going on. And a lot of the time I hadn't mentioned stuff because I was like, well, but we had two crafts out there the other night, sit in place for about 20, 30 minutes. Camera wouldn't pick it up. Night vision wouldn't pick it up. Only the human eye could. I even tried to get the flash from the camera thinking it might bring out the, like if it was ultraviolet, something like that. And I've seen them go through a lot of stuff around this neighbourhood as well when they've come down. So that was interesting that you've said that, because a lot of people haven't. See, that's something to me that somebody having an experience would keep that back about the craft, it going through stuff, because that's, you know, that's really out there. That's trippy.
Yeah. And we were fortunate that that gentleman was an artist, because he could, he sketched it.
Oh,
he did a very good sketch. Yeah. So, and I show that to the community groups, you know, I have a presentation I use when I speak to the public. And that's another area too, is I think I'd love to encourage people who want to get involved in the UFO community to get out there and talk to library groups and community groups and school groups, and, you know, it just do your bit and get out there and talk to people, you know. And I'm always meeting people who are interested in the subject, and there's more of them all the time, you know. And even when I go out, I went to a coffee club just recently with a friend, and I happened to have a copy of Philip Mantle's latest book sitting on the table, which I was giving to her. And one of the young guys came over, he was only about 20, he was serving us, and he said, oh, can I have a look at that? And he picks it up and he says, oh, do you know about Stephen Greer? And do you know about this and this and this? And I look at the woman I'm with, because she's in it as well, and we go, yeah. And we had this big UFO discussion here at the coffee shop. But I meet people like that all the time. There are people out there who are interested in the subject now, you know. And we've got to, when we see that interest, we need to capture it and cradle it.
I think test it too, because what I've worked out is I'll do two things. Either they're open-minded and they're like, that's trippy stuff, you know, cool. Or they're sort of weird. Now, with the sort of weird people, I'll bring them straight up, astronauts, military witnesses, not bang them with it, but just go, did you know about, you know, the National Press Club, whether it was, you know, Greer's one or Robert Hastings or the X conferences with Stephen, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Because saying that there's, you know, over 500 military witnesses, and some of these people have been in charge of nuclear weaponry, you know, they've got top credentials, and then you've got the photographic video evidence, because there are sort of people that they can take in what I've just said. But when you sort of say, all right, you've got high credentials, evidence in terms of photographic video, ground radar, above ground radar, you know, all this sort of stuff, that sort of brings me where the other people don't give a shit. They're just like, this is cool. So you sort of just got to, that's just tips for you all out there, because you sort of just, and like you said, you have to cradle it, because you don't want to lose them and you don't want to be too full on that you do their head in with him. Because I've done that with a few people. I've just like, bang, all right, they're about to have an aneurysm and drop dead on the floor. So, yeah, definitely.
I think you need to think you have the therapeutic approach to the UFO subject, which is be quick on your feet. You know, whatever comes up, that's what you utilize, you know. Yeah, and I think, you know, a lot of people say things about Stephen Greer that are unflattering these days, and I have to say, at times I might have said a few things like that myself, but I am forever indebted to that man for putting together the DVD of the Disclosure Project, because I have made hundreds and hundreds of that DVD and given it out to people. And whereas they may not listen to someone like yourself or me who talks about their personal experience, they will certainly listen to someone who's got those credentials and they talk about what they know about the UFO subject while they're in the military.
Show that first 10 minutes of the 2001 press club. I've shown it to police officers, people from all walks of life, if they've sort of not taken me serious but have pretended to. But I won't, you know, ramp down. I'll just be like, hey, just watch the first 5-10 minutes. That's all I want you to do. I won't say shit. Whatever you think, cool. I think you should see this because this was, you know, National Press Club.
Yeah.
It's, you know, where they have a lot of politics and whatever else go on. But with Dr. Greer, I've got a lot of people asking me my opinion. I don't know the man. And I'm indebted to him too because I've been able to use what you've just said. Mm. I've even had actual CSETI members come to me saying some weird stuff about him and wanting my help. And all my CE5 stuff is up for free. I don't charge money for it. I think it's everyone's right if they're at that stage. I'm not going to judge a man because I haven't walked through his shoes, but I do appreciate what he's done. And anything else about steroid uses, which people are going on, a lot of this stuff I want to see back up for either people put up or shut up, because this is where it's wrong, is that there's a lot of stuff, even photographic evidence, put out on the plate on the internet. Nobody's verified it, or they just copy and paste article without any sources, or going and picking up a phone, talking to the source themselves. And this is sort of the problem, where a lot of people believe anything that's put out. There are that lot. And now, I'm not saying I'm telling people what to think, but what should happen is that there should be a format where things are verified and then put out, and people can do whatever they want, but at least some verification or, you know, whatever. So I don't know. That's, and I just wanted to say, because a lot of people have been contacting me about him, and I don't know him, and I'm indebted to him for what he's done, but I can't say he's using steroids, I can't say he's misused money, or that he's up himself, because I don't know him. But
well, Stephen Greer is an interesting person. I heard him speak down at the Bond University on the Gold Coast recently.
Yeah,
and
did you go to that, did you?
Yeah. There's quite a few people there. But, you know, how he came to those CSETI protocols, which really sort of brings us back around to the beginning of this discussion, is through, he had a near-death experience himself, and he was out of his body and he went out into space. And when he was in this out-of-body state, he had connection with these extraterrestrials. Yeah. And they talked to him, and he from there he developed the protocols for the CE5s. But again, it just highlights, I think, that consciousness is going to play a huge role.
It does.
In the UFO subject, and we really have to get our act together and get out of the lights in the sky stuff and get into the consciousness. And and for my part, next year I plan to start teaching workshops on shamanic journeying to make ET contact, because I think that it's not happening. And I think that, you know, we can meditate, but there's
other things to it.
Yeah, it's shamanic journeying is quite profound. And I was amazed when I was doing my own training how many people actually who had no idea about the UFO subject were actually reporting seeing ET or extraterrestrial craft in their journey. So, yes, there's a lot going on out
there.
A lot going on in here too.
Yeah, now that's something I looked into lately, because I do a lot of that type of stuff. And there is so much that I couldn't cover at all, but there's a page which is called CE5 and Free Meditations on my website. I sort of just give as much of an overview without doing somebody's heading. I think if people are at a point where they're meditating already and have experienced some things, I think they will know if they're ready to go. But with what I'm trying to do is help people initiate themselves, contact individually and in a group, where it's not just about sitting down meditating, although that is one of the protocols. I don't use tones like Dr. Greer and other things, but whether it's safety hazards, types of equipment, these are things like types of equipment doesn't matter. It's just if people want to catch the stuff. But whether things to look for, there's a lot of things that people don't know what to look for when doing it. I've got Have you ever seen a hot road on a hot day, a road on a hot day, how you get that shimmer?
Yeah.
We get beings coming up, interacting with a see-through like that, as well as crafts. You hear weird sounds, get in touch. You know, there's all these different types of things. But I think a form of meditation, mine aren't as long as his, but they're more straight to the point where you bring... And one thing I do stress to people is that you have to clear your energy. Because, and just like ghost hunters, there's a lot of kids that will watch taps and ghost hunting shows and go, all right, cool, I'm out to do it. Woohoo! They don't think about things where they can get attached to you, follow you home. Because that's where I'm different to Dr. Greer. I have experienced. Now, I won't say negative or good or bad. I'll say service, beings in the service and then self-serving beings. Mm. And I think it's important to block out anything negative and negative psychic bonds and bring in enlightened energy. But the way I do it too is I don't say you're going to definitely see a craft. What I say is what's meant to happen is meant to happen, whether there is contact through telepathy, whether you see something, whether you feel something, whether you astrally go somewhere. There's so many aspects, and a lot of people contact me and go, how do you know when you leave the body where to go? They're thinking in body, computer, mind, which is you'll go where you're supposed to. Because you'll experience what you got to, and this is things where I think we need to pick up our game. And what, by the sounds of what you just said, that's what you're bringing to the plate is bringing another format, which is
exactly.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and I think too that having said all that, I think that we really have to concentrate on our own personal development.
Yeah.
I think that when we make contact, and I'm sure we will eventually, as a collective, that we. Depending on who we make contact with, we have to start thinking about who we want to make contact with. I think we have to decide how we're going to do it as a collective, because eventually, you know, planet Earth will be part of the galactic neighbourhood that we share the Earth with, the Milky Way with. So
we've got a lot of cleaning up in our neighbourhood to do first, and. Even if there is contact tomorrow, we have got to really work on ourselves. And like I said in my documentary, is that if we want to manifest a peaceful society, we've got to work with it. Each of us, all anybody can do is work in here, individually, and that will project and manifest outside of ourselves. And if we all do it, it will be what we want. Because when you see the profound nature of the holographic reality, that we're all one cell of one body, that we're all one consciousness interacting with ourself, really, when you get down to the point of what I know personally, but I can't say this is the way it is because people want evidence, but it's good because people are questioning things. I think that it's going to be more of a collective thing, but like I've taught with the CE5 protocols is that if you had a group, the more that you each individually work on yourself, when you come together, that is amplified that energy by a lot more if you have worked on yourself individually, and that can bring some great things to the planet.
Yeah. And I like to say to people that I think ET is already here. It's humanity. Yeah. It's humanity that's having a problem showing up and completing the equation. And that takes a lot. You know, it means that we as a planetary society have to come out of denial. We have to take the blinkers off and look around and go, well, yeah, it's a big universe, you know. And I'm glad to say that is happening, but it could be speeded up a bit more. But basically, I think, it comes back to people like yourself and others who go public with talking about their experiences. People like myself who are involved in groups, providing platforms for people who have encounters to speak, and again, educating the community around us about the UFO subject, because, you know, the authorities aren't going to do it. It's going to be the grassroots movement that does it.
Well, I think it's going to be a thing where the government's going to have to catch up to us, because it's like I was saying to you before the show, is that, you know, I don't need the government to tell me there's a magpie in the backyard. You know, so why, you know, when people, it's like as if everyone's relying on them. If we can't rely on them at the moment on so many issues, not just the Australian government, but as a world with whatever's going on, and you look at the powers that are connected and all that sort of stuff, it's up to us to empower ourselves, to let go of the ego and just take respect, you know, have respect for ourselves and empower who we are. And, if, you know, like it gets back to working on ourselves. But being open-minded too, because that's one thing that I've totally learned with my stuff is that you just can't know it all. But I think if we're open-minded, we can learn. And learning is what life is about, experiencing and gaining knowledge. And we've got to be open-minded to taking a lot. So
I think we also have to be prepared to – we just have to be prepared, because the world authorities are not politically motivated at the moment to come – you know, to come out about the UFO subject, about extraterrestrials visiting planet Earth. There's no motivation whatsoever for them to do that. So until that happens, it will eventually happen, but it may happen after I'm dead, you're dead, who knows, that, you know, we, people like us at this level, have to do a certain amount of work to make sure it keeps ticking over, to make sure that we're cultivating in people's minds and help that keep on going, that reality is not as we've been taught. It is far, far greater, that we're usually most of the time living with an abstract of reality, and to keep expanding our awareness and our knowledge about that, so that we can grasp a greater reality and prepare ourselves for the time when that comes.
Now, you're spot on, and that's where, you know, what you've just said is a great way to look at it. I think, like, in saying that, I think with how things are going to happen, it's not going to play out how most people think, too. Mm-hmm. And I think it's not going to be one of those things where little E.T. gets off the UFO and comes and has a coffee. You know, there's so many aspects where we've got to do cleaning up, and how we've got to be introduced into a way where it's not too overpowering, but where you can see the greater reality for what it is. So yeah, there's a lot of food for thought, but what we'll do, we'll wrap it up there. I'd love to have you back on sometime, because I think we could talk for hours.
We could. We've just scratched the surface. It's such a huge subject. Yes.
Well, yes. I'll put a link to UFO Research Queensland too up on the site, and I might even put one to your, is it Body Light Therapies?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's fantastic that you do that. So we'll wrap it up there, and Cheryl, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you very much, Peter. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you. Talk soon.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.